The views and opinions expressed by tonight's guest and topic of discussion do not necessarily represent the official policy or position of Spaced Out Radio, Spaced Out Weekend, Spaced Out Radio Limited, its hosts, syndicated carriers, or anyone associated with this broadcast. Any rebroadcast, reproduction, or other use of this broadcast or podcast without the express written consent of Spaced Out Radio or Spaced Out Radio Limited is strictly prohibited. Listener discretion is advised. Are you experienced?
Stop right there!
Atop the mountains of British Columbia, to you, listening around the world, this is Spaced Out Radio, with host Dave Scott.
They let us play with all our toys, they let us think that we're big boys, they let us make the louder noise, but we're in the world. They let us think we're Superman.
You can follow us on our website, spacedoutradio.com, on iTunes, and tune in. Follow Dave on Twitter, at Spaced Out Radio. On Facebook at Spaced Out Radio Show, or on our YouTube channel, Spaced Out Radio Show.
Are you playing with Bigfoot and aliens again?
Dad, you gotta stop haunting the goats. It's scaring them.
All right, seriously, put down the pointy sticks.
Okay! Game on!
Game on!
Game on!
Password is...
All right.
Buckle up, space travelers. It's time to go for a ride on Spaced Out Radio. Mr. Bumblefoot, Dave is ready for liftoff.
Seriously, Dave? Really? Aren't you a little old for a tinfoil hat?
I am. Toby!
Bye-bye! Thank
you!
Bye-bye! Yeah, please take your seat of honor. We're both here to perfect this off.
Start. 2, 1. Boost ignition and liftoff.
Good evening and welcome to Spaced Out Radio. Tonight I am your host Dave Scott, and it's good to have you along for the ride on this Thursday, March 23rd, Friday, March 24th. If you're on the East Coast, hope you had a wonderful day. We are live right here in Uncle Jimbo's cabin, right here in the Great White North, as we are live 7 days a week. We welcome in everyone listening in on WQEE 99 Rock the Key down in Noonan, Georgia, at spacedoutradio.com, on Spreaker, on the United Public Radio Network, Renegade Talk Radio, the High Plains Talk Radio Network, and on Revolution Radio. If you like our music, you can thank our resident guitar god, Mr. Ron Bumblefoot Thal. Bumblefoot rocks us in and out of every single show as the official music of SOR. If you're a social media junkie like I am, do me a favor, follow us on Twitter at Spaced Out Radio. Give our Facebook page a like, Spaced Out Radio Show. On Instagram, you can follow me at Dave Scott SOR. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, Spaced Out Radio Show. Tune us in on TuneIn. Download our shows from iTunes. We're also on RadioGuide.fm, TalkStream Live, and on Stitcher. And of course, our website is spacedoutradio.com. And if you head on over to patreon.com, we've got some really cool swag for you, our listeners, to check out if you want to become a Spaced Out Radio patron. If you want to take part in this show, I'm going to tell you right now, we do not take phone calls. But if you're in one of the chat rooms, we will take your questions, put them in capital letters on Revolution Radio, on Spreaker, at our website, spacedoutradio.com. If you click the Listen Live button, takes you right to the chat room. On the UPRN chat room, we're on Facebook at the SOR Space Travelers Club. Or if you're on Twitter, make sure you use the hashtag SpaceOutRadio. I'll get to your questions and comments in there as well. If you head to our website for just $5 a month, you can become an SOR Space Traveler. We got some really cool swag to offer you. While on our website, have a little peruse around. Check out the Encounter Online. That is our brand new news section put together by our editors, Eric Markham and Everett Thiemer. You can check out my latest blog there as well. And if you've had an experience you can't explain, do me a favor. Fill out an SOR Sightlines report. Our researcher, Mike Schmidt, is going to get right to it. We welcome in our terrestrial radio stations following this show, WQEE 99 Rock the Key in Noonan, Georgia, the home of The Walking Dead, and the United Public Radio Network on 107.7 FM in New Orleans and over 160 countries around the world. We are also live in Las Vegas on Renegade Talk Radio and on Revolution Radio. Remember, we are the largest nonprofit online station going today. Head on over to freedomslips.com and donate. What the paranormal needs is a healthy dose of skepticism. I'm sure we could all agree with that statement, because when you look at all facets of this field of cryptid research, there are so many theories and so many different stories and experiences, it's difficult to try and figure out what is real and what is just made-up jargon for someone who's trying to collect on their 15 minutes of fame. Look, there's no denying people are having some strange occurrences in their lives. There's no argument there. I've had it done myself. But when we have so many investigators chasing down so many stories and theories, it's hard not to have the truth get lost in the shuffle. This is where tonight's guest comes into play. John Tenney is one of those investigators searching deep for the truth. The author of over a dozen books, John is one of the most well-recognized and highly sought-after investigators in ufology, paranormal, the occult, right across North America. It's estimated that over the past 27 years, more than 80,000 people have attended one of his weird lectures. His website is also weirdlectures.com. Welcome to the show for the first time, John Tenney. Glad to have you on board. Thank you so much.
Oh, glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's very much appreciated. And you know what? We do a lot of shows every night. But I'll tell you, I can honestly say, my friend, that you have a lot of followers. I was shocked at how much my Twitter was going off today, knowing that you were coming on the show tonight.
I have a lot of friends indeed.
Well,
I think it's one of those things that just happens when you spend this much time being a weirdo.
I know the feeling. I know the feeling all too well. And as only 27 months into being a weirdo, I can honestly say that, you know, I'm surprised by our numbers so far as well on this end. But, you know, to have someone of your stature and your respect from the community coming on our show tonight, I really do, on behalf of all Spaced Out Radio listeners, appreciate you taking your impressive and important time to spend it with us.
Oh, thank you so much. But I really am just a guy who likes weird stuff, and I don't know how it, I mean, I kind of know how I stumbled into it, but I am always amazed that I can continue to do it and that I'm supported by my friends.
When you go back almost 30 years, when you started on this voyage of the unknown, is this something that you just had an interest in as a kid through comic books or maybe movies, or was it something that you had your own personal experience that kind of drove you into this field?
Yeah, you know, I'm not one of, there's a lot of people in the quote-unquote community, the paranormal community, that have stories about seeing ghosts when they were little kids or, you know, being abducted when they were babies and things like that. And that just wasn't me. I grew up a lower middle class kid just outside of Detroit, and I was a punk rock kid, and I didn't like people telling me what I was supposed to think about. And, you know, when I would ask questions in school that were alternate ideas about what I was being taught, that was always causing problems. And when I was probably, you know, I had a general interest in strange stuff. I used to read books like everybody does, comic books and horror books and books about UFOs when I was growing up. But when I was 15, I met a guy who was going to school to be a history teacher, and he needed someone to be his gopher. And he specialized in conspiracy theories, political assassinations of the 1960s and 70s. And that was the real kind of spark that got me going, realizing that there were volumes of historical books that were only written from one person's perspective. And that's what was being taught as history. And when I realized there was this fluidic nature to history, that it changed, that each person had their own perspective, and that somewhere in that murkiness, you could find something that looked like truth, but, you know, you had to actually dig for it. That's what really sparked me. And then with his research, and I started helping him do lectures. I had a heart attack, which was just a genetic thing. And it's just a misfire of my heart. And when I recovered from that incident, I obviously lived. You know, if I died, this is a really great radio interview because you're talking to a ghost. But obviously I came back, and when I came back, I wanted to focus my ideas and what I was doing on what we weren't supposed to, quote unquote, think about that had to do with the paranormal, the supernatural, the anomalistic, UFOs, all of that high strangeness.
So in the end, have you ever had any experiences of your own that you would absolutely say, that was strange, that was weird? Or have you always relied on what other people's stories are?
No, I mean, obviously over 27 years, there have been a lot. I mean, I did a podcast a few years ago, which is still available if people want to search it out, called Realm of the Weird, which are like the 13 weirdest stories that ever happened to me. But, you know, I've met people who have claimed to be time travelers. When I've been in locations, you know, on television shows, I've been pushed or scratched. When I haven't been on television shows, I've been pushed or scratched. In 1999, I was invited to sit in on a Vatican-sponsored exorcism, so I witnessed that personally. And so there have been an uncountable amount of really strange things that I've personally experienced. The difficulty is, if we're being honest with ourselves as researchers, we have to pull ourselves out of our own event, because yes, we can have this personal experience. We can know that it happened to us, but at a certain point after it's over, it is only a memory. It only exists in our memory. We know that our memories are flawed. Our memories don't get better with age. And so there is this doubt that we must allow ourselves to feel when we're discussing things. That's what really drives me. I don't have any beliefs, and I tell that to people all the time, because a belief is something that will never change. I have a lot of ideas about things, and if I can find a better idea, then I will move on to that better idea. And I think that's one of the big issues that we have in this community of, you know, loosely knit friends and researchers. You know, there's so many people who go into it with their own beliefs, and they're unwilling to change those beliefs. And I don't think that gets us anywhere.
Looking back on your career, did you ever expect this to be your lifelong dream, your lifelong passion in trying to find the answers to the unknown? And I realize that's a very vague question, but everybody has their story and their tales. I can tell you point blank that for myself, with my own personal experiences, I had no understanding when I left terrestrial radio as a reporter. Geez, going on 10 years this year, then I would be doing this. I thought my journalism career and my degree was in mothballs, in retirement. So when you look at yourself now, almost 30 years later, do you say, man, you know, that's been a lot of time, a very long time, pardon me, trying to find answers to the unknown?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I thought that maybe I would give lectures, you know, on the weekends, which is what I did for years and years and years. But if you would have told me there would have been this growth, this outgrowth, which really began, you know, in the early 2000s with paranormal reality shows, that there would be a need or a want to have someone who toured around, or multiple people that toured around and gave lectures all the time, I would have never thought that. You know, I thought I would go to college, probably become a history teacher, and, you know, do these weird lectures during the weekends. And in the 90s, it really seemed to be that way. When I started doing lectures in the 90s, you know, there wasn't this great desire for a speaker. So I would pay to rent out library rooms and bring coffee and cookies, and then hopefully 10 people would show up. So it's really crazy now to have someone book me, fly me across the country, and speak to 500 people. Like, that is really mind-blowing.
Are you surprised that you seem to have such a cult following? And I'm looking in the chat rooms, and there's people in here that I've never recognized before, people retweeting everything from today that I've never seen retweet our information before. Do you feel like the head of a paranormal cult in a good way? Not one of those suspicious ways, but you have a following because people trust your word. They trust what you do. They trust what you're saying, that you're not someone who is going to give them some hokey answer, whether it's saying I'm a scientist or whether it's saying that I believe in all the spiritual hoodoo that's out there. Do you like that? Do you like being that guy?
It's hard because I grew up a bookish person. So I grew up reading a lot of books, hanging out by myself, being the weirdo, you know, that many people were called. And I think one of the reasons that I have so many friends and so many people like me is because I've never not embraced being a weirdo. When people are growing up and that insult is hurled at you, when people say that you're a weirdo, they mean it to hurt you. And at a certain point you realize, you know, if I am not like you, if I'm a person who doesn't hurt other people, if that's what it means to be a weirdo, then I'm glad I'm a weirdo. And so I think by embracing the strangeness that everyone has throughout their life, I think that people find, you know, a certain amount of comfort in that. And I don't try, you know, we all lie, but when I'm dealing with something which to me is very important, which is the nature of our existence, I try to be as honest as possible. And so I think that people really respond to that. I love listening to people's stories. That's the only way I can learn. I don't presuppose to know everything, and people have their individual experiences that they need to share, and I'm all too willing to listen to them and help them out. And I think that makes a big difference. And plus, I think it also makes a big difference too that, you know, I didn't start as a personality on television. I started as a researcher, you know, when I was 15 or 16 going to what were then called metaphysical conventions. I was the kid who was just interested in weird stuff. And I learned that part of what we're supposed to do is talk to each other openly and honestly.
Do you feel after almost 30 years that you're any closer to solving these riddles?
Oh, absolutely not. I feel like every time, I mean, that's kind of what is so inspiring about this whole realm of strangeness that we explore, is that, you know, as soon as you open a door, all it does is lead to a hallway with more doors in it. And so, you know, you might get these brief glimpses or flashes as you open a door, you know, that you're about to discover something, but you always discover that it's far. I have a quote that I always say, which is, what you think is weird is weirder than you think. Because it really does leave you down this garden path of endless variety. So I'm not any closer at all.
I'm going to tell you, I'm very happy to hear you say that, because I know you listen to this show quite often behind the scenes, and I didn't know how often. Yep. Until you and I talked before the show, so thank you. But what I say a lot on this show is, when you're an experiencer and you open that first door to see what's inside, there's 10 more doors. And then behind each of those 10, there's another 10. And it keeps going and going. So to hear you use that same comparison that I use on this show actually quite frequently is actually nice to hear, that someone else looks at it the exact same way that I am. And that way, I'm not as much of a weirdo as I thought I was as well.
You should be proud to be a weirdo. But yeah, I mean, it's the difficulty that we have, right? Like, one of the things that I try not to be set back by people, I want to know their experiences. But it's very hard when you have someone who says, you know, this, when they're discussing the paranormal or the anomalistic, whatever you want to call it, when they say this is a ghost or this is Bigfoot or this is a UFO, or, and they say it definitively, and they say it as a statement of fact, because, you know, if I've learned anything, it's that we do have our own experiences. They are perspective based. They're subject to change over time. And so you can say, you know, this is my best guess at what's happening, or these are some of my best ideas about what's happening. But it takes me back when someone says that they know absolutely 100% for sure that something is something. And that applies not only to the paranormal field, but to religion or science or any other field. I mean, even science is willing to say these are our best guesses at this current time.
Do you then have a favorite subject in this that you like to talk about? I know with me, I love the UFOs and aliens. I really do, as I've been up close and personal with both. I love Bigfoot. I've been within 100 feet of two of them. Do you have something that you absolutely prefer to cover rather than the full spectrum and the plethora of topics that are out there?
Well, I think that's weird. It's a great question, but for me... You know, starting as a conspiracy theorist and starting with political assassinations of the 1960s and 70s, what was really brought to the forefront and almost immediately is, as I read about government cover-ups, whether it was during the JFK assassination or Robert or Malcolm or any of those people, MLK, you know, you uncover more conspiracies about different things. So it was while I was reading about the Kennedy assassination back when I was, you know, 15 or 16, that I first found out about Roswell and Project Blue Book. So then I started reading there. And then you start seeing the same names that happen in Project Blue Book, in the Kennedy assassination. And then you start seeing more names that are dealing with the government's experiments in MKUltra, remote viewing. And then you realize that this is all of these things: Bigfoot, ghosts, UFOs, conspiracy theories. It seems to be one giant monster with an infinite amount of tentacles. And so I think that one of my biggest difficulties is when I meet Bigfoot people who refuse to talk to UFO researchers, or UFO researchers that refuse to talk to ghost researchers, and they've broken it apart into their component pieces. I think that you miss how strange it is when you realize how interconnected they all might be.
I fully agree with you, because I don't know if you have heard my story, and if you don't mind me just, you know, not trying to brag here or anything, but just why I got into this. Mine started very paranormal, and then it switched to UFOs, then it switched to having my Bigfoot sighting, then back to UFOs, then alien contact. And a lot of people are like me, where they've had the full gamut of experiences. Yet, we seem in the paranormal to always shoot ourselves in the foot by trying to break these off into tiny branches rather than go for the entire tree trunk. You're more of a tree trunk kind of guy, where you think this is all intertwined somehow.
For sure. And, I mean, whether it's a shared folklore that we all have and we're all using different words. When I do lectures, I ask people at the beginning of the lecture, how many people here believe in ghosts? And if it's, you know, usually I'll do a ghost conference. And so 90% of the people will raise their hands. And what's interesting to me is everyone is raising their hands because of what they think a ghost is. Whenever you have any kind of philosophical discussion that you intend to go somewhere with, you start the conversation by saying, this is what the word is going to mean. That way we're all on the same page when we start to have this discussion. And the paranormal community has never had that discussion. What do you mean by ghost? What do you mean by Bigfoot? What do you mean by extraterrestrial? Because if you're speaking about an invisible being that can move through walls, those are extraterrestrial stories that we've had since the 1940s. And yet it applies as well to ghosts, as well as applying to some Bigfoot stories where it's a non-corporeal being. The origins of Sasquatch come from, you know, the original first Americans who talked about an earth spirit, you know, the Sasquatch, and then we get Sasquatch from it. And then it becomes a giant being, but originally it's more in tune with a ghost than it is with an animal. So, yeah, I mean, there does seem to be this separating of the fields, and I understand, for at least for popular media and social media, why that happens. But I really think that you miss out on the larger picture. When I first started researching, you know, back in the day, there used to be in the 1940s and 50s, there were all these people who took pictures with non-digital cameras back in the 40s and 50s who would get balls of light. And so if you look at UFO magazines, there's all these orbs floating around. The first person to ever write a paper debunking orbs as ghosts was Bruce Maccabee, who's a UFO researcher. He wrote a paper in 1998 saying that it was just dust and particulate matter. But the ghost community never saw that because it was written by a UFO researcher. And we could have, you know, really advanced the field if the communities were sharing information instead of, you know, breaking it up.
One of the things I want to discuss early here with you is the fact that I love the fact that you call yourself a skeptic. Yet you've had all of these experiences, but you still take that time to step back and analyze everything for what it's worth. A lot of people would look at you, John, and they would say, if you've had all these experiences, what is there to be skeptical about? Why do you consider yourself a skeptic?
Well, I think in the ultimate consideration of skepticism, and I think one of the problems that we have is we now live in a world where there's kind of new skeptics, capital S skeptics, which are disbelievers in everything that seems to be paranormal or anomalistic. And that's one thing. But when I first learned about skepticism, it came from a point of Plato and Aristotle, and they considered themselves skeptics. And that meant someone who was always challenging their own beliefs. They were doubting themselves and their own experiences to reach a fuller understanding of reality. And that's what I am. And I don't have any problem with that happening. When I was something paranormal, ghosty, or UFO-y or Bigfoot-y happens to me, I doubt it. And I look at it from multiple angles. And so I'm skeptical. There's no real good proof, philosophically at least, that I'm sitting in my house talking to you on the phone. I can't really prove it. We seem to have a shared reality. But, you know, you have to be skeptical of the nature of reality. And I know throughout my life that I've made improper decisions based upon false memories and things that I thought were real. So when people ask me, you know, what's the scariest thing that ever happened to you? The scariest thing that ever happened to me is the most recent scary thing because it's the freshest in my mind. It's the one that I know that I'm remembering the most correct. But as time goes on, that's going to fade into just an anecdotal story. It's just folklore, my personal folklore. So I am skeptical of all of it. And I love to hear it, and it fascinates me. And I would like to, you know, figure out if some of it is real, but I know that that's probably not going to happen. And so I don't have a problem with being a reality doubter or a skeptic.
In your definition, then, what does skeptic mean?
A person who doubts their experiences and who's seeking for a larger truth. I mean, that's kind of the dictionary definition of what skeptics were originally. There's a person right now, kind of a philosopher in England, whose name is Mark Vernon, who talks about this all the time, is that somehow skepticism changed from doubting your personal reality and challenging yourself to find better ideas. That changed into this modern version of skepticism, which is challenging everyone else to figure out their own reality. That you have your reality figured out, and now I'm challenging you to change your reality. That's a new version of skepticism. You know, the original skeptics from back in the day were people who doubted themselves and were searching for a higher truth for themselves. Because you can't really want anybody to be better if you're not better.
Mm-hmm. So when you're looking at the entire field of the paranormal under the umbrella word or the tree, whatever you want to call it, and you watch these paranormal groups or you watch these UFO groups, and there's always somebody there, whether it's on a television show or in one of these teams that doesn't even have a television show, there's always that one person who has to be the skeptic.
what you have experienced. Do you laugh at that, or do you just kind of scratch your head and say, really, like, that's why you're brought in?
I mean, again, it's television, right? So there are these tropes that have been created to kind of drive television, and unfortunately the community kind of follows what is most well seen, which is usually television. So even if groups aren't on television, there'll always be someone in the group who's a skeptic. But you'd be really hard pressed to find a group of let's say ghost researchers or ghost investigators. You'd probably be really hard pressed to find an entire group that says, none of us here actually believe this, but we're interested and we want to be able to believe it. That's why we research it. And I think almost in a lot of senses, that's where we should be at this point. I think that we should have ideas, but if you already believe it, I don't understand why you're still researching it. If you've already figured out the answer, if you're already convinced that you know the truth, then for me, at least, your job is done.
I'm curious what you think of the field of research is like today. I'm curious to get your opinion on that, because I have a very strong opinion, as do many of our listeners, that say the paranormal just seems to be in total disarray with what we are trying to solve, what we are trying to find. As someone who has been doing this for pretty much 30 years, and you look back, because you're a guy who sits back in the middle of the night in a dark room listening. Sorry, I'm stealing your Twitter line from earlier. I'm trying to make it romantic here. But you're in a dark room, you're listening, and you look on social media, or you go to these different podcasts or radio shows or YouTube channels. What do you see? What do you like, and what do you absolutely abhor?
It's interesting, right? Because there has been a profound effect on the field due to paranormal television shows. And in the beginning, that's just an amazing thing. We went from people who never being able to talk about this in a large groups. We would talk one-on-one about our experiences. But something that paranormal shows did was it allowed the topic of conversation to be more easily had with large groups of people. And that was really great. And as the shows went on, people started forming all these teams, and that's great too. My difficulty with paranormal reality shows that when people watch television, a lot of people think that's what they're supposed to be doing. And so they do that, and they don't ever try to think, how should I do this differently? You know, they do this, this is how they do it on television, I'll do it the way they do it on television. And so that's frustrating to me, especially when I try and tell people, like, no, you don't have to use this equipment or that recorder. You can use whatever, you know, you want to use. This is about you doing experiments. So that drives me a little crazy. But I think what really sometimes makes me flustered is the fact that we do very little actual sharing of data with each other. And that if we really did, and I know it's boring to people, and there's nothing wrong with wanting to go out and have an experience and be scared. That's absolutely fine. But if we're going to solve or get close to solving or even help to add collective information to these mysteries so that someday someone else can solve it, there has to be a certain amount of information collection and exchange in a certain manner. And I know that that becomes boring, and that means that there's rules all of a sudden. But if you think about a place that's really well known to be allegedly haunted. So if you take a place like Waverly Hills or Ohio State Reformatory, if every group that went in there sat down and said, okay, at this time of night, this happened, and the moon was here, and the temperature was this, and this is what we heard. If every group that went into those places did that, I mean, that's thousands and thousands and thousands of bits of information that could be collected and compiled. And maybe we would notice that on Tuesdays in November, when the moon is full, you hear a voice. And so all of a sudden that becomes repeatable phenomena, which is something that can be tested, which is something that can be qualified and quantified. And then we've really done something.
Do you feel, though, that it is in disarray right now because so many people do not really know what they're investigating? They don't know what they're trying to solve. As I've said on this show many a time, John, and I'm sure you've heard it, you know, it's like in the Ghost field. They're out playing Pokemon Ghost like it's a new reality game, much like Pokemon Go or geocaching or something along those lines, rather than conducting true research. Anybody can go find a ghost in a haunted house or a haunted museum or, you know, run-down asylum. But it takes a true investigator to actually go out into the field and get the reason why that ghost is still there, or to try and find that there is truly life after death.
I think that it's difficult, right? Like, I completely understand the want to go into a haunted location and have an experience. That, to me, makes perfect sense. And if people don't want to collect information and exchange it, if that's not what their goal is, then I feel that that's fine. That's absolutely fine to go and want to have an experience, to go into a place and want to be touched. That's completely fine for me. And I also understand that we're constantly getting an influx of new people. They'll watch shows, so they get excited about the experience. They'll form a group. They'll have their group for 2 or 3 years. They'll have their experiences, and then they disband their group, and then they're no longer in the community. So another group comes in and takes the place. That's always going to happen. What's difficult for me is that the community as a whole, if every ghost group across America donated $5, and we could build a single place where everybody could store information, everybody could use that information, everybody could come and have conferences and lectures and exchange ideas, but it just doesn't seem like that is something that people want. And that's kind of frustrating to me.
So then what is your opinion on all of these researchers, whether they're ufologists, whether they're cryptid hunters or ghost hunters, trying to say they are actually conducting scientific research?
It's interesting. I mean, I know that people are doing good work in all of the fields, whether it be ghosts and UFOs and Bigfoot. But again, like I said earlier, I think one of the difficulties is, you know, you have good anthropologists and good zoologists doing work in the Bigfoot field and collecting information. But it, you know, it's good for Bigfoot research, and they don't look beyond anything that might be weirder than that and how it might apply to that. And the same thing happens with ghosts and UFOs. So you have people collecting information, which is good for their individualized field, but not for the overall what seems to be reality of high strangeness that permeates our whole known cosmos, which is at least what I think is probably really important for us to do. So it is frustrating. And, you know, there are people who say that they're doing science, and they say that a lot of times so that people will get past, oh, you're just a ghost researcher. And they'll say, no, we have all this equipment and we're doing tests and we're scientists. And I mean, you can be a citizen science, but then you have to actually do science. You have to have it peer reviewed. You have to take your information. You can't just take an EVP and label what the EVP says and then put it on YouTube and call that peer reviewed. You know, you have to set up test results and double blind negatives and account for confirmation bias on your own end. And again, a lot of times that's not what people want to do. So it's just easier to say we're doing something sciencey, and that drives the scientific community crazy, but it makes people feel better about walking around in the dark and wanting to have a personal experience, which again is fine if that's what you want to do. But if you want to do science, then you have to do science.
I think the biggest issue that a lot of people are having, and we've brought this up numerous times here, is how many people say they're conducting the scientific research, but you know darn well they haven't conducted any research in a scientific manner since high school, number one. And number two, they seem to be eliminating a lot of potential theories to maybe make more credible their own opinion, John. What do you feel about
that? That's a big part of it, too. You know, people do want their ideas to be validated. And so, you know, if my friends and I, if we think that Bigfoot is somehow related to an extraterrestrial, then, you know, if that's all we ever look at, then again, you have this kind of confirmation loop, which happens, which is we're going to throw away everything that doesn't confirm what we want. We don't want to investigate the stuff that doesn't matter to us. If Bigfoot's not an extraterrestrial, so all of a sudden we've proved Bigfoot is an extraterrestrial. That's problematic. We see it a lot in the ghost community when someone will get scratched or be attacked, and then everyone will say, oh, well, you know, there's obviously something evil in that location that's attacked them. That's a part of our confirmation bias and how we think about reality, too, because we have difficulty interacting with other human beings, living flesh and blood in the physical human beings. We don't get people's motivations. We don't understand their psychology. We have trouble doing that with a living person. So now you take what may in essence be an invisible entity, a non-corporeal being, and you make a value judgment based on yourself and your belief that this thing is evil because it scratched me. And that is just a personal bias. And it's already influenced you by thinking, oh, well, there's good ghosts and bad ghosts. There's demons and angels. Those ideas already color and muddy the waters if you're trying to do research. And so, yeah, it becomes highly problematic.
Do you think that hurts the field as we struggle for credibility as it is? Because let's face it, John, everybody in this field, whether you want to believe it or not, we all want that mainstream street cred. We all want that version of television or news or the New York Times to come along and say, you know what, this is real, this is happening. We all yearn for that. And yet, it seems like this field, more than any other, loves to shoot itself in its own foot every time we get close to something because we're too busy trying to shoot down theories that we may not personally believe in, rather than thinking there might be some legs to that story.
Yeah, and that's what's interesting, right? Because when, you know, people always want to... You'll hear people say online or on Twitter or at conferences and lectures, people always say, like, when will this become an accepted science? When will we be taken seriously? And the reality is, when you look at researchers, psychical researchers from the 1800s, the very first ghost hunters, the Society for Psychical Research in England back in the 1800s, when they were doing research and data collection and information exchange and doing tests, when they found something that actually was real, that could be qualified and quantified. As a matter of fact, one of the issues they were looking at was recovered memory. How can memory be stored in people's brains? Because was it past life experiences? And that's what they were studying. What ended up happening was that aspect of quote-unquote paranormal phenomena or psychical phenomena was removed. It became psychology and psychiatry, a soft science, but an accepted soft science. And then there's still this other stuff that needs to be researched. So when people say, when will this be an accepted science? It's never going to be the way that we think of it now. Once it's accepted, it won't be ghost hunting anymore. It will be something else. It will be called, you know, whatever they want to call it. You know, it might be called phantosophy. Like, who knows? But it's not going to be called ghost hunting, what we're doing now, if it's ever accepted.
Would you like to see a day, or can you see a day, when this is accepted as a pseudoscience?
No one expected in the 1800s to create the science of psychology or psychiatry. It grew out of deep research and methodological studies, and it took a long time to happen. And so, yes, I can see a day when aspects of what we do now are accepted in the scientific community. But again, as a whole, it's not going to be what we now currently understand as ghost hunting or paranormal researching. Like, that's not going to be what it is. It's going to be broken into component parts, again, certain aspects that can be weighed and qualified and quantified, or it's going to turn into a philosophy. It's going to turn into philosophical debate. And I don't have a problem with that either. I've argued before that one of the things that this field misses is the deep philosophical debate that we should be having with each other on the nature of reality, on the nature of what it's like. If a ghost exists, how does it exist? How does it see us? These conversations should be had at the onset of when people start to ghost hunt, not 15 years down the road. We should sit down before we start saying, oh, maybe there's just a kind of transparent version of grandma walking through the house. We should be asking ourselves, what happens when we die? What do we become? How could we retain memory? How could we see things without eyes? How could we hear things without ears? These are questions that are seem really difficult, but they speak to the very nature of existing. And so I have this really funny question that I ask sometimes to people, which is, do ghosts wear underwear? And it seems like a silly question, but if you see a ghost wearing clothes, does it have underwear underneath it? And if it does, where does it get those underwear? Where does it get its clothes? How does it make its clothes? You know, if you see a ghost that's dressed like a Civil War soldier, what is the energy manifestation to create the buttons and the zippers and every single thread that went into that shirt and the shoes and the hat? How is the beard and mustache combed? These are things that we should be talking about, and no one ever does. They just accept it as, oh, that's a soldier.
In your opinion, then, what needs to happen for the mainstream and the scientists who shoot down all of these theories, what needs to happen for them to start taking this seriously?
Well, I think there are some. I think that there are some scientists that speculate about what might happen. And I feel like we reached a pinnacle with science at a certain point. The science that we understand today, that we see today, is an outgrowth of this kind of Descartes philosophy of splitting spirit and solid. And so you had science at a certain point, a couple hundred years ago or 150 years ago, say, you know, we're only going to pay attention to the solid. We're not going to pay attention to the non-solid, the non-weighable. And we've reached this kind of almost limit, I feel like, with science now, where you have people like Neil deGrasse Tyson, Brian Cox. You have these scientists who say, okay, listen, we know science. Ghosts aren't real. There's no such thing as aliens. There's no such thing as time travel or interdimensional beings. Again, that's not what science does. Science says it's our best guess right now with the current information that we have. And so there are some scientists, good scientists, that still do that. Brian David Josephson, who's a Nobel Prize-winning scientist in England, he has his picture on a stamp in England, has been doing telepathy research for the past 40 years. So there are scientists out there doing this type of work. But popular science, people, like I said, like Neil deGrasse Tyson or Brian Cox in England, do this limiting thing, and it's very difficult to understand. I understand they're scientists and they're not philosophers, so they want to be able to say, we're right, we know. But saying there's no such thing as ghosts 100% is the same as saying there are such things as ghosts 100%. No one knows. You have to leave, and nothing's ever 100%, 99.44. You know, there has to be an element of weirdness in everything for it to stick together.
I got a couple questions coming in from our audience here, if you don't mind, because
sure.
we always like to include our audience questions in this show. And this one comes from RPA at the Spaced Out Radio chat room on our website, and he is asking, let me just get it here, it scrolled up on me. What do you think, John, of when you're investigating, do you prefer to do it during the night or during the day or with lights on, with lights off, when you are using video?
I investigate at all times of the day and night, whenever I'm available to investigate. I don't think that if there are ghosts, if there are spirits, that they sit around looking at their watch waiting for it to get dark and now they know it's time to scare us and slam doors. I think if it's happening, it's happening. I do think that if there's some type of residual intelligence, I think that if it's a residual intelligence from a human, then it might have some degree of the same psychology. So if you go to, let's say, an old mental asylum, you would want to go during the day because if you go to a mental asylum at night, everyone that was ever there was told to be quiet and told to go to sleep at night. And so walking around in the dark in the middle of the night, asking someone who used to be there to shout or give you a sign or knock on a wall doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, because if they do remember what they were and who they are, then they would be sleeping at that time. So, you know, I will investigate whenever I have the chance to investigate, but I don't think that there's a good time to really, like, night is the best time or day is the best time. But just, I think that if it's happening, it's happening, then you can go and do it anytime you want to.
I prefer the night. And the reason why I do is the sounds seem to be quieter. And everything seems to be a little bit slower, a little bit quieter, and I find my senses are a little bit more heightened. Would you be that way too in the night as well, John? Or do you, like you said, you don't really care if it's night or day. You're still, we all know, you're still going to get action.
I mean, you have pluses and minuses on both sides, right? So if you go at night, obviously you're going to have less ambient noise. There's less traffic. There's not people mowing their lawns. Most of the dogs are inside, so you're not going to get a lot of ambient noise. The problem is, you know, when you remove any kind of physical experience from the brain, when it's dark, when it's quiet, the brain wants information. I don't know if anybody's ever done a flotation tank or an isolation tank, but when you cut yourself off from information, when you're in the dark, your brain starts to manifest information. It makes you want to see shapes in shadows. It makes you want to hear sounds in creaks. And your brain is a puzzle-solving machine. So the con to doing something at night is that your brain, your own personal psychology, will manifest information. So, you know, I prefer to investigate whenever I want to, knowing what the limits are, you know, both during the day and at night.
Let's get to another question here. We got about 3.5 minutes before we got to step out for our first break here. And this one comes from Michael in the SOR Space Travelers Club. And he is asking, John, do you think that ghosts seem to have more access to the energy they use after dark?
I don't really think so. I've always found it interesting that, you know, I'll research with some people and they'll ask ghosts to turn light on and off. And then I'll research with other people and ask ghosts to turn lights off. And, you know, I think that the transference of energy that would happen, if you think about it, like, you know, that you, during the day, you have this giant ball of energy that's shining down that should be easy to collect the thermal energy from. So you would think that during the day, they would have more access to energy. And at night, they'd be trying to figure out how to sleep because it's dark and there's not this huge ball of energy above them shining down. But again, none of that is really known to us because we don't test for it.
And I think we can squeeze in one more question here. This one comes from Mike B. at #SpacedOutRadio on Twitter. And Mike is asking, John, have you ever seen ghost evidence that you think would actually stand up to scientific scrutiny?
So that's difficult. I've seen good evidence for, or good data for ghostly experiences. The problem is that for it to stand up to scientific scrutiny, it would have to be reproducible. And that I haven't been able to see. I mean, to be able to reproduce it on cue, on site, or be able to make it manifest at a certain time over and over and over again. And that I've never seen.
Do you think that evidence is one day coming? Are we close to it with all the technology that is now coming into the fields of the paranormal?
I would hope so. I would love to be able to discount some of the experiences as non-understood phenomena, natural phenomena. As a matter of fact, you know, I really don't even like the word paranormal because it would mean that it's outside of the normal. I think that what we're experiencing, if we're experiencing anything at all, is normal, and we just haven't yet developed the techniques for understanding it yet. And so I would love someday for it to be able to be quantifiable. The only thing that is interesting is that, you know, we have to realize the seriousness of this field. If you make a breakthrough in mathematics, it's great. If you make a breakthrough in chemistry, it's great. If someone makes a breakthrough in the field of parapsychology and paranormal phenomena. If you talk to and can reproduce ghostly phenomena and understand what is after this life, you have fundamentally changed humanity forever. That's how serious what we're doing actually is.
Very cool. We got less than a minute here before we are going to go to break. So, John, I'm going to get you to hold on right there for just a couple of moments. John Tenney is our guest tonight on Spaced Out Radio. His website, weirdlectures.com, if you want to check it out, writes about everything paranormal, from ghosts to cryptids like Bigfoot and Dogman to UFOs, extraterrestrials, time travel, conspiracies. There isn't anything out there that John will not investigate. And in the end, that's what makes him such a great investigator. Remember, if you're listening in at spacedoutradio.com, we want to say thank you to all of our brand new listeners that are hanging out in the chat room tonight. Really appreciate you taking the time. You know who you are. And if you're on Twitter, use the hashtag spacedoutradio to connect with us as well. Or, during the break, head on over to patreon.com, where you can become a Spaced Out Radio patron, just like Paula did yesterday. Thank you, Paula. We'll get back to you guys right after this break.
From coast to coast to coast, Blacklight Uncharted is taking on the paranormal across Canada. From ghostly hauntings to the UFOs flying above in conjunction with MUFON Canada, we're closely investigating what's going on in the northern skies and checking out the apparitions that walk among us. Check out our videos right here at spacedoutradio.com. We want to know your thoughts, we want to hear your experiences, and we want you to share your stories. The answers are out there, and we intend to find them.
Would you like to become one of our space travelers? All you have to do is click on the space travelers icon at spacedoutradio.com. For only $5 a month, you can get access to some great prizes, as well as private monthly shows, newsletters, and a members-only section on our website. Become a space traveler today.
The third Monday of every month, Spaced Out Radio is going to bring you a different look at everything paranormal. Welcome to The Reporters. Jim Mallard, Vanessa Hogel, Denise Garcia, and Christina George join me, Dave Scott, for a look at the weird and strange from the other side of the microphone. We'll break down ghosts, UFOs, cryptids, and the people investigating them. The paranormal media has never been heard like this. Come listen to The Reporters.
It's paranormal news at its finest. Welcome to The Encounter. At spaceoutradio.com, The Encounter Online is SOR's trusted news source for everything weird and strange going on around the world. This is news editor Eric Markham. Our team of journalists are scouring the planet for those strange stories that rarely make the mainstream. No fear-mongering or fake news here. Head over to spaceoutradio.com and encounter The Encounter.
Hey, this is Canadian Paranormal Investigator Mike Moore. The third Wednesday of every month, I'll be teaming up with Dave Scott to bring you Ghosts of the Great White North. Each month, we will bring on guests from across Canada to discuss their ghostly encounters. Canada is a paranormal hotbed with stories you've never heard, so we're going to bring them to you. So get comfy on your Chesterfield, grab a donut, and join us, eh?
Have you had an experience you can't explain? Had a run-in with ghosts, maybe Bigfoot, or seen lights in the sky? Hi, I'm Mike Schmidt from the SOR Sightlines. I'm here to investigate your sighting. Head to spacedoutradio.com and fill out a report on the sightlines. All your information is 100% confidential, and I will help you figure out what you've been seeing. File your report, and let's find out the answers together.
Visit purpleplates.com today. For over 40 years, the Purple Energy Plates have been delivering amazing results for their many customers. Inspired by the great genius Nikola Tesla, the harmony, healing, and energetic effects of the plates have proven over and over to be beneficial and often miraculous to thousands of customers. With their money-back guarantee and the many benefits, how can you afford not to get one? Check their site for daily specials and choose from their many energy products. You won't be sorry. Visit them today at purpleplates.com for mind, body, and spirit. And expect a miracle.
Are you interested in advertising on Spaced Out Radio? Head to our website at spacedoutradio.com and click on our advertising tab. there. You will find an assortment of ways you can get your product out there with us, from radio commercials to banners and social media. Have a product you like our hosts to endorse? We can do that too. Visit spacedoutradio.com for more details.
Have you got your cosmic passport? If you need one, tune in to Cosmic Passport on Spaced Out Weekend. This is Elizabeth Anglin, ET experiencer, spirit medium, and host of Cosmic Passport. Each weekend, I'll be bringing you interviews and support from other paranormal experiencers, and the best in intuitive spiritual guidance from across the globe. It's all happening starting at 9 p.m. Pacific Time, midnight Eastern, on spacedoutradio.com.
From British Columbia to Northern California, Pacific North Weird has Cascadia covered. Check out our feature videos at spacedoutradio.com, where I, Vincent Zunza, and my super sleuth partner, Alexandra Sullivan, track down the weird and strange stories from around the Pacific Northwest, from Bigfoot to Mel's Hole and everything in between. This is what makes life exciting. So why report the normal when we can report the Pacific North Weird right here at spacedoutradio.com?
Oh, there's only one way to rock, loud and proud, in high definition, Radio 702 Rocks, Las Vegas.
Every Saturday and Sunday night, as Dave Scott wanders aimlessly in the wilderness, you can come hang out with me, James Tyson, in Spaced Out Weekend. Starting at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern, I'll take you along as we talk with some of the best experts in their fields. SpacedOutRadio.com is the place to find us. So sit down, relax, put your feet up. Enjoy the topics like the paranormal, supernatural, intuitiveness, and so much more. Hope to see you there.
Don't have time to listen to Spaced Out Radio live? Wherever you are, the car, the office, the shower, or even if you're traveling, we're right here for you. Each Spaced Out Radio show can be found on iTunes, TuneIn, and on our YouTube channel, Spaced Out Radio Show. It's the perfect way for you to catch up on our shows. For more information, just head over to our website, spacedoutradio.com, and tune in to us today.
The views and opinions expressed by tonight's guest and topic of discussion do not necessarily represent the official policy or position of Spaced Out Radio, Spaced Out Weekend, Spaced Out Radio Limited, its hosts, syndicated carriers, or anyone associated with this broadcast. Would you like to connect with us? Head to spacedoutradio.com for all your latest show info. And hit us up on Twitter using the hashtag Spaced Out Radio. Now, back to Dave Scott and SOR.
Welcome back to the second hour of Space Out Radio tonight. Good to see the chat rooms jam-packed tonight. Good to have you all with us and all of you listening around the world. Thank you so much. Tomorrow night on the program, J.C. Johnson's bringing in a few of his friends to talk everything cryptid. If you haven't heard J.C. Johnson speak, well, he's known as the Indiana Jones of the cryptid world, so you're going to want to check that out, 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern time at spacedoutradio.com. We want to welcome in our listeners listening in on Terrestrial Radio at 99 Rock the Key, WQEE, down in Noonan, Georgia. Thank you so much for letting us be a part of your night. We're also live in New Orleans on 107.7 FM on the United Public Radio Network, and that spreads out to 160 countries around the world. Thanks, Joe Montaldo, for bringing us on board. We're also live in Las Vegas on Renegade Talk Radio and on Revolution Radio. Remember, if you're listening to the Double R Machine, they are a donation station financed by you, the valued listener. Head on over to freedomslips.com and donate today. Bill Cardwell has set the password for tonight in the SOR Space Travelers Club, Gadzookery. Gadzookery is your password for tonight, so if you're a space traveler, make sure you use it wisely and you know what to do with it. If you want to follow us on social media, you can do so on Twitter, at Spaced Out Radio. Give our Facebook page a like, Spaced Out Radio Show. Tune us in on TuneIn, download this show and others on iTunes. We're also on RadioGuide.fm, TalkStream Live, and Stitcher. And our website is spacedoutradio.com, where we have a plethora of features for you, including reading up on
The Encounter Online, our brand new news section. You can join the SOR Space Travelers Club and much more. Or you could head on over to Patreon.com, type in Spaced Out Radio, and you can become an SOR patron. It's game on.
All right.
All right. Perfect. Perfect. John, we got a few more questions from our audience that I